No, I'm not often scared. I'm quite scared, actually. It's a great privilege to introduce an extremely senior member of the civil service, Sir Bona Neville Kingdom, who's a permanent secretary and Whitehall's data sharing czar, is going to talk to us now about government's attitude to data and particularly interception of personal data. So, Sir Bona, round of applause, please, for Sir Bona.
I'm not sure about this thing, but if you can't hear me, please do tell me at the back. You can, good. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bona Neville Kingdom. I'm very pleased to be invited to speak to you today at OpenTech in my capacity as Her Majesty's most senior civil servant concerned with information and communication technologies, or ICTs. I am also, as you probably know, the Prime Minister's data sharing czar. I sit at the confluence of the flows of shared personal data around Whitehall, and therefore own all the aggregated personal data held by government. I've been asked to say a few words today about the benefits of how government uses open tech and ICTs to provide intercept modernization, personalized services, and safeguarding your identity. Perhaps an appropriate starting point is my own inspiration in this work. The divinely inspired words of the Persian poet Hafez, when he speaks of his love of the Almighty, the compassionate, the all-seeing, the all-knowing, all-protecting. Dar kharabat moghan noor khoda mibinam in ajab bin ke che noori ze koja mibinam jilve bar man mafroosh ay malakul haj ke to khane mibini man khane khoda mibinam. I share these words with you today because I think we can say without immodesty that something of the sublime spirit of his poetry is reincarnated in our policies for intercept modernization. Are you all right? Are you all right back there? Good. Yes, as I was saying, the sublime spirit of his poetry, I feel, I can say without immodesty, is reincarnated in our policies for intercept modernization, for transformational government, and for safeguarding your identity. Now, intercept modernization is merely a plan to maintain the UK's lawful intercept capabilities in an ever more dangerous world. Devised by a team working under myself, it will ensure our capability lawfully to intercept and exploit data when fighting crime, terrorism, and other social abnormalities is not lost. We achieve this by the deep inspection of packets. Working with our private sector partners, including Serco and Form, the project is making excellent progress and will provide exceptional value for money. Transformational government is the way that we deliver personalized services to every man, woman, and child. We do this by joining up our central holdings of personal data. The Prime Minister has only this week announced a legal right for every citizen to have their full medical record uploaded onto the central database, with compensation if this is found not to be the case. Similar principles will apply to pupils, to drivers, and to every other aspect of our lives. Finally, I'd like to say a word about safeguarding your identity, which from this week brings our identity policy into the 21st century. It is all about empowering people to use the identity government issues them in ways which benefit them and society. Government clearly holds the central role in enabling that process, and we must have a transparent and consistent approach to safeguarding identity information, including online services. Every child matters, ladies and gentlemen. And so too does every patient, every personal assistant, and every driver. Transformational government, intercept modernization, and safeguarding your identity, make these principles manifest. They are, to conclude, the service which we in Whitehall humbly offer to you all. در خرابات مغان نور خدا میبینم. این عجب بین که چه نوری ز کجا میبینم. To the classicists among you, I might say they are both the sine qua non and the nec plus ultra of a stable and prosperous Britain. Or again, to use a metaphor from the very heart of our Christian Western culture, these ICT policies emanate as the three in one and the one in three. Ladies and gentlemen, the world looks with envy and admiration upon what we have been able to achieve with our open tech in this country. Indeed, my driver awaits to take me to Sunningdale for a workshop with senior Iranian and Chinese delegates who wish to emulate some of our success stories. This is a very promising sign for British exports and British jobs. And so to conclude, the situation must be that we in Whitehall must please excuse me, Mom. Do that? Really? It's a bit last minute. The organizers have asked if I would also manage a few words of introduction about the next speakers. Open Rights Group. And No to ID. What can I say? I do recall my private staff did prepare a brief on the matter. Yeah. Behind the deceptively bland Open Rights Group name lurks a bunch of dangerous fanatics intent on destroying the British record industry. This group contains known file sharers, people whom we believe have taken illegal drugs, and people whose intercepted communications include light-hearted references to terrorism. Do we really need to hear anything more about Open Rights Group? I think we can take that as sufficient introduction, don't you, David? There seems to be nothing on No to ID. But I must ask you, ladies and gentlemen, how can one possibly say no to ID? Our identity is the thing that defines us. It is the very essence of our status in society. My own identity, for example, is Sir Bona Neville Kingdom, KCBO, KCMG. Why on earth should I seek to conceal that from the properly appointed authorities? Why in heaven's name would one want to deny one's own identity? Well, that's a very fair point, sir, but I would suggest only if you had something very, very terrible to conceal. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall let these dangerous and misguided fanatics now speak, since we must. But I would generally strongly recommend that we do not associate ourselves publicly with these people in any way. Indeed, I myself shall leave forthwith. Above all, do not give your money to these organizations. Let them pay for their own long overdue haircuts. These self-appointed busybodies cause us nothing but trouble with their constant googling and twerping. Do not listen. Do not even think about them. We in Whitehall don't, I can assure you. You would do far better to allocate any spare resources that you might have to the IT Trade Association Intellect, or perhaps the Civil Service Benevolent Fund, of which I am honorary lifetime president. Ladies and gentlemen, on that note, may I thank you for your kind invitation, and if I might say so myself, your rapt attention. I wish you all a very good afternoon. Thank you.
I think Sir Neville has left the building. Those of you who still want to hear more about open rights and O2ID, that session will be carrying on now. If any of you still wish to hear me going on about 4ID, we'll be doing it in 3E. So let's spend 30 seconds doing swap around. I will not be offended, not many follow, after that wonderful introduction from Sir Neville.
Losing too many people. Looks okay.
Right, one, but yes, if he's not, certainly. Right, thank you very much, everybody. Obviously, I'm very concerned at the rapt sort of reception that Sir Bona Neville Kingdom got, so I'm hoping that he won't be too hostile to me in this talk. Okay. No, let's just leave
it. You plug it in and it works on a PC, I don't know.
That's cool, thank you. Okay, so what we're here to talk about today is the Intercept modernisation plan that the government are currently putting forward, is currently in consultation. So, what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk very briefly about... So what I'm going to talk about to start with is just roughly what this plan entails in technical terms, if you like, what roughly they're planning, although they're not being very specific. And then once I've done that, Guy will talk about the specifics of the legislation, the regulation framework, if you like, how this will work in a legal sense. I hope that this isn't too basic. I expect a lot of you will know a fair amount of this, but I'm going to just try and say all of it, if that's okay. So what's the idea? What's the government's idea? The government are claiming that they have a need to maintain their capability in the sort of communications data they're used to getting for legal investigations and so on. Historically, they've had records of calls, for instance, on your telephone, so you phone somebody up, that's logged because it's part of the billing process. They've been able to get hold of that data. And they're saying now that's being eroded. They're not going to have as much information as they've had before, apparently, because new services that are coming about, are coming online, are not recording the same level of information, and that's not as available to them. What new services are they talking about? They're talking about social networks, your webmail service, voice over internet, instant messaging, and what they want to record from those services is who has contacted who, not the full information in those in your communications. Not, you know, they don't tap all your phones at the moment. They're looking for who has talked to who. That's the information that they're after. So how will they want to record this? This isn't about requesting that information from the service provider who may be located abroad, and they're saying that's a problem. If the company's located abroad in the United States, maybe they have a problem getting the information they want. So instead, their answer, rather than talking to these companies directly, is to monitor all of the communications on the UK network. That means mass interception. So talking about using deep packet inspection equipment, installing black boxes, if you like, on every major network, every point on their network, so they can see everybody's communications in order to do that. So this is a bit I'm expecting nearly everybody here will know. How does DPI work? How does deep packet inspection work? Well, network traffic, as I'm sure everybody knows, is sent in small pieces called packets. And deep packet inspection looks at all of that content rather than just the bit that says where it's going. It then reassembles that information in order that their systems can then read that web traffic. Say, what are they looking for in that traffic? They may look through a Hotmail page, for instance, look at who sent what email to who, and record that. And then to try and do the same with, say, messages on Facebook, or who's calling who on a Skype, a VoIP call. Hang on. They want to what? Doesn't this sound a little complicated, expensive, intrusive, and at the end of the day, something you can just simply bypass? Well, yes. Right, okay, so it's complicated. Let's just start with some really simple complications, if you like, if that's not an oxymoron or something. You can't just identify individuals from who is an ISP customer. I mean, you know, an ISP customer then represents a number of individuals in a household. And then from all of that, there's an awful lot of information they're going to have to collate. It's not related, you know, and then they're going to have to make that information something that they can query. They're going to have to store it and then be able to query it. Every service on the internet that you can think of that they might want to parse through this DPI process will need its own script in order to parse it. And every time, you know, if the format of a Hotmail page changes, then you've got to rewrite that script. And then that script has then got to be put into every single box that's been installed on every single network point and be updated. So that's complicated. It's expensive. There's a lot of work for somebody doing all of this. There's an awful lot of DPI equipment to be installed. There's databases in every communication service provider that are needed. So not talking about a single database anymore. They're talking about lots of little databases across the networks. And that needs a great deal of maintenance. That's a lot of expense, a lot more perhaps than the £2 billion that they're sort of suggesting. It's also intrusive. This information is not currently collected by communication service providers at the moment, unlike your telephone logs. This isn't being collected in some huge central place by your ISP or whatever. We're talking about mass interception to create mass surveillance. That's intrusive. It's not proportionate. It's also easily avoided by the individuals. Switch on encryption, and this stuff is not available to these boxes. So we heard a week or so ago that Gmail are proposing to use default encryption on their accounts. Others may wish to do the same. That means Gmail can't be read. Simple. So your black box, as one of our advisory council says, your black box turns into a white elephant. So are there cheaper ways of dealing with this? Well, yes. I mean, there already is international cooperation to get data from people when there's a serious incident, a serious criminal. Perhaps, you know, some of that is already happening. Perhaps there could be more. Perhaps that could be better. But if there is somebody who needs investigation, if there is a known crime taking place, well, there are ways of getting that information. It's already being stored in one of two places, either on the person's computer. That's a good place to look. You know, go and get a warrant for their computer. Look at that. And then if that's not practical, if there are good reasons for not doing that, then maybe request the actual service that this person is allegedly using and ask them to deal with it. Now, that's a lot easier than attempting to effectively put surveillance on the entire population just for the few incidents where this actually becomes needed. And if there needs to be selective monitoring of an individual, perhaps that's something that could be done through a warrant. So that individuals on networks could perhaps be measured, but that would be the way to do it rather than, again, compiling information on absolutely everybody all of the time. So will it happen, this plan? Well, let's remind ourselves this is going to be an unpopular idea. It's going completely against the current of concerns over privacy that's clearly been building up over the last couple of years, and it's the end of a government's term. Personally, I think it's going to take an awful lot, shall we say, courage for governments to try to push this forward at this particular point. So maybe it won't happen. Maybe they'll be foolish enough. You know, they're not showing a great deal of political judgment, so, you know, who knows. But it's questionable at this point whether this is something that's going to happen, particularly if we as a movement, as movements, go and put that pressure on and make it clear that this is going to cause an awful lot of trouble. However, the motivations behind this, you think about what the technology is doing, it seems to be much more about monitoring and surveillance than collation of data or getting hold of the data at points when it's really necessary. And behind that, we also have to say that the civil servants, Sir Bono and so on, seem to be very keen on this. So, given that the civil servants are keen on it, we could see this idea come up again. It's not just something that perhaps is going to go away. It will live in a drawer until the next administration, I should say, finds themselves threatened with a terrorist offence or something, and then the civil servants who are keen on this will suddenly say, well, we have this plan that could deal with your problem. So what to do? Well, these are the simple things you can do with us right now. Join org if you haven't already. Subscribe to our action list, orgaction, -subscribe gets you to that list, orgaction at lists, .openrightsgroup.org. We'll give you information about this and other org issues as time comes along. You can also obviously write your MP. I would say that's a good thing to do. If you feel up to it, you should also go into the MP's surgeries, you know, talk to them and explain the issues from your perspective. You're people with a great deal of technical knowledge, and bringing that to MPs is effective because you're experts and they have to listen to you if you are their constituent. That is a powerful thing to do, and sometimes I think that can have a lot more effect than us or other people just simply sending emails and so forth. It's certainly better than that. Also, let other people know, write a blog, just get word out, get the discussion going. Let's have a public debate on the underlying issues. Just remember that there's a great deal of information that's accumulating in different ways. This is not something where the government is simply losing capacity, as they claim. This is a situation where there's more and more information about us because we do more and more online. So there's actually a lot more that they're having available. And the discussion we should be having is about what's appropriate for people to be able to get in what circumstances, not what's the best way of the government getting hold of even more right now and just, you know, expending huge amounts of public money in order to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. My name, for those of you who don't know me, and plainly Sir Bona doesn't know me, so maybe I better introduce myself, is Guy Herbert. I'm General Secretary of No2ID. Many of you will have seen me before. Oh, gosh, that's working now. What I want to talk about is the other side of it, the structural, the institutional structure of mastering the internet, as we understand it's known inside Whitehall, which is really a plan for interception without limits. It's an ambition rather than an immediate practicality. I'm sure the people in this room know a good deal more about it technically than either Jim or I do. Nonetheless, there is a structure being built to enable it to happen when it becomes technically possible. This doesn't require very much in the way of legislation. Much of the legislation is already there, but it needs to be used in a slightly different way. And the Home Office is busy at the moment holding a public consultation on this and related legislation. The consultation is called Protecting the Public in a Changing Communications Environment. Home Office is very big on public protection at the moment. That's the vogue phrase. That's the phrase that stands behind everything that the Home Office is doing. It's a department that's about public protection. So what do they reckon that public protection is? Well, when you go and talk to, as I did the other day, the people in the Counterterrorism and Security Directorate, they tell you that this is a game of pass the parcel. They don't put it quite like that. But they say that the retention, acquisition, and use of the data is carefully controlled at every stage. There's oversight. There's oversight with the retention, because that's done under the Data Retention Directive and under Electronic Communications Act requirements. And the sysadmins in the various communication service providers are taking care of that. They tell you that the acquisition by the investigating authorities, of which there are dozens and dozens, the big attention has been given to local authorities, which do not customarily have access to communication data. But there are many, many organizations beyond the expected police and security services who can do this sort of thing, and they're all self-authorized. The people in the Home Office will tell you, yes, but that's overseen by the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which controls it, and the surveillance commissioners who make sure that the procedures are being followed. More on that in a bit. And finally, there's use. Use of the data is said to be controlled by your rights under the Data Protection Act. That's what they tell you. Honestly, they do. Once it's been acquired, and that acquisition is controlled by the data surveillance commissioners, use that investigators make of it is a data protection matter. So the ICO will look after it. What in practice that means is that when data is actually used, it comes before the courts, that it is controlled by the courts, the rules of evidence. But the Information Commissioner doesn't have any time to deal with this. And strangely enough, you're unlikely to know when the information is being gathered about you in order to make a complaint to the Information Commissioner. So this model is not really very convincing, even without the extension of the system by introducing black boxes into every communication service provider. If you analyze it a bit more, it looks something like this. Actually, only some bits are overseen. The retention, there will be black boxes. So that is completely without oversight in the model that we're aiming for, or at least the Home Office is aiming for. That data will be scooped up at source and accessible automatically. The acquisition procedure remains the same, but this is the procedure, remember, because the Surveillance Commissioner only reports on the procedure. The Surveillance Commissioner reports to the Prime Minister, who passes on a censored report to Parliament, and the Surveillance Commissioner, who hasn't had time to go round all the people in, under his purview, although he tots up the number of requests, which is running at something over 500,000 a year at the moment, he checks whether each of these self-authorised investigators is following their own procedure. That's all he checks. Not whether the acquisition and use of the data is legitimate or proportionate or in any way acceptable. And he's a retired judge following a very tightly written terms of reference, so he doesn't have any say over that. All he does is he checks procedure is okay. The substance of the acquisition, something completely separate. Who decides whether or not it's a good thing to look at your phones and who you call? Just the investigator. Essentially, the investigator makes an application on the right form to the right person in his department, and then the information is disgorged. There's no oversight there either, hence the Red Cross. Further, once the investigator has acquired the data, he may decide to distribute it to other people. He may pass it to specialists for analysis, may pass it to other departments, may be under a duty to pass it to other departments. Certainly, immigration authorities are now required to pass information to the police and the Inland Revenue, and the Inland Revenue and the police are now required to pass information to the immigration authorities if those they think there is any relevance in the information. All these people are required to pass this information on in relation to serious fraud investigations and fraud and serious crime generally, and to third parties. And under the Serious Crime Act, information can be passed on both to external agencies. Any authorised credit agency concerned with fraud here or abroad, to the Audit Commission, which is the government data miner, in addition to being an oversight on local authorities, is now responsible for doing data matching operations for all these agencies and can be commissioned to do that. All this, although governed by law under various data sharing powers, has almost no oversight. Again, across. Finally, use. Use, again, follows the model that it's supposed to follow, except that that material that's gone out to third parties, that material that never finds its way into the courts, that material you don't know about, is unlikely ever to come to the attention of the ICO or the courts. So that use constraint is really only in the courts, and a lot of strange things can happen outside that information when that information is used for intelligence gathering, in data matching operations, and creates pictures for various organizations outside the simple prosecution of offenses. So we've got a grand surveillance system there, which only pokes above the surface on very small occasions. And finally, there's what I've called secondary retention. This seems to be completely ignored, almost completely ignored by the law. It's controlled notionally by data protection principles in that data shouldn't be retained for longer than it's necessary for the purpose. But the purpose all the way through this pass the parcel exercise is in the hands of the investigators. And if the investigators or the prosecutors or the third parties to whom they have passed this information for very good reasons that are controlled in legislation or implied in legislation, decide that they need to keep that information to pursue their purposes. There's no control on them doing that. And again, you wouldn't know it had happened. Which brings us to a bit of oversight. What oversight is there in practice? Accountability and oversight at the retention phase or at the secondary retention phase? Very questionable. Those blue clouds perhaps represent whistleblowers. The only way we'd ever find out it was happening. The only way that it would ever be controlled is if it became scandalous. The acquisition procedure, it's accountable to the PM, in effect, because the Surveillance Commissioner reports to the PM, but the PM has a certain amount of executive interest in this proceeding smoothly. Perhaps he's unlikely to rock the boat all that much. Acquisition, substance, and distribution maybe are bound by human rights law, but are they bound in practice? No, they're not. Court rulings are the only real oversight on use. Poor, stretched information commissioner getting more duties all the time with the seemingly oversight of trillions of transactions and a few dozen staff up in Wilmslow and a small budget. He's not going to be very effective on this one either. So there's actually very, very little accountability built in the system. I would suggest actually that is deliberate. Oversight and accountability are a nuisance. And so at every stage, there is resistance to changing the procedures that are built into Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which allow self-authorization, essentially self-control, is all that stands in the way of mass surveillance. And it's standing in the way less and less, I fear. Finally, what does it look like to the outside? Now, to people who are interested in it, which is the people in this room and in the Open Rights Group and No2ID and various other places, this underlying structure, this infrastructure of surveillance may be quite apparent, but to the outside world, it looks something like this. You can't see that very well. You can't see it very well at all on the wall. That's quite deliberate, because unless you're looking at them, these things vanish. The only things that come out into the public realm directly are a censored report to the PM, which is presented to Parliament, concerning the acquisition procedure for Regulation of Investigatory Powers requests, and the court rulings themselves when they're reported. You might, if you were taking an interest in this sort of thing, if you were a journalist investigating interest in serious crime investigation or in intelligence investigations, you might see some of the action in the courts. If you were a barrister, you might be aware of what was happening with the rules of evidence and how evidence was being used in practice. But most people will only see the reported court rulings. So not only is it unaccountable, but it's invisible too. That, I'd suggest, is not actually a particularly tolerable situation. We ought to do something about it. We have to change these structures. However possible, however plausible, as a technological feat, mastering the internet is, any improvement, any increase in the surveillance capacity of the state has to be overseen institutionally, and it will gather pace, it will grow, it will expand, regardless of the legislation, because it can be done with black money, without limit, unless there is oversight at each of these individual stages. What we need, I'd suggest, is a system of warrants for each of the stages, and that's something that will be in my presentation to the both to parliamentarians and to the public consultation exercise. I feel it's quite necessary to participate in the consultation exercise. In fact, I'd say that it's necessary to respond to the consultation exercise. Do not let the Home Office claim that nobody objects to this. So, you do have to write to them. You have to write to them about this thing, the protecting the public in a changing communications environment. That's the technical end. But you also have to write to them about the review of the regulation of the Investigatory Powers Act. And the closing date for that is Tuesday. Now, do not be put off by the questions that they are asking in that. Because all they're asking is, should local authorities be able to spy on people who are sending their children to suspected the wrong school? That's next Tuesday. Is it? The 10th? Next Friday, I apologise. The date's right, the day is wrong. It's me reading things the wrong way around. Too many American dates, I fear. But no, the date is right. The 10th, which would be Friday, thank you, is the date to get it in. Ignore the questions. Say what you think of the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act and how it can be improved. They are supposed to be consulting the public, so let's give them some consultation back. 10 days later is when you should talk about the interception in technical detail. But we all need to do that, but we need to keep an eye on it too. Now, Open Rights Group will be keeping an eye on these things, but if you want to, somebody who's looking after the progress of the greater database state from a less technical point of view, then Know2ID is the place to come. Please support us, and we'll try and support you too. They are not, but they're on the Home Office's website.
or a link or something. I mean, if I completely forget those URLs and that information, where do I go to remember it?
I will make sure that I get that put up tonight.
Okay, so we open this up to questions for a short while.
Works at the moment. So when we talk about improving it for the modern age, it's difficult. So we don't even allow telephone intercepts in court at the moment. And so we've got no real way of knowing how much current modernisation plays in keeping crime down, preventing crime. I mean, it might be the case, you know, like 90% of all crimes are, you know, detected through analysing post, phone, or anything like that. But we don't know, and that's something that. It doesn't bother me about this. I think what you're doing is right. But
what evidence there is always very misleading and spun. If you talk to the police intelligence people, they will say 90% of serious crime investigations involve communications data. But then that's very much the same as the Spanish police saying 100% of police investigations involve identity cards. It's there, so they use it.
I mean, the whole thing's got to be a question of balancing different things together, isn't it? And there's a cost question, there's a intrusion question, there's an effectiveness question. If you're going to do it purely on effectiveness, then what they should do, I mean, LSE report pointed this out, the most effective thing you could do if you're worried about getting communications data would actually be to ban the use of pay-as-you-go mobile phones. Because if you're dealing drugs or something, what do you do? Do you use a contract phone? No, you do not. Right? So you know, there are ways of anonymizing yourself, which we all think are quite acceptable. And we take the risk of the fact that drug dealers might use anonymous telephone calls because we actually think that pay-as-you-go phones are a pretty reasonable idea for the majority of population, particularly ones people who've got less money in their pocket. We're not going to penalize all of the people who need to use pay-as-you-go phones because we think we need to catch some drug dealers. So, you know, there's always these payoffs, and we've got to consider it in the round.
The Lisbon Treaty had passed, and the Supreme Court in England will pass within the House of Lords, the European Court of Justice. I'm wondering what sort of UK legislation and European legislation in this context?
That's a very complicated one. It's not entirely clear that that's the effect of the Lisbon Treaty. As I said, that's a very complicated legal argument. There is, simultaneously with the British government's obsession with database state and the collection of data, an ongoing European wide obsession with it, in the same security bodies and interior departments and homologues thereof in the various countries. There, certainly, if Lisbon is passed, that sort of thing can be more done at the European level. But whether there is a direct relationship between the European plans, which tend to be even more grandiose, and the British ones is very hard to say. If anything, the feedback has been the other way. The reason we have the present data retention directive is precisely because the Home Office lobbied for it. And in fact, two member state governments went to the European Court of Justice to dispute whether the data retention directive was valid, because, as they said, it was a security measure which was not permitted under the treaties. So there is certainly dissension in the House there, but there's no simple relationship, certainly.
And I'd add that Europe at least gives us some protections with human rights, and that there ought to be a proportionality question in this. The question is, with all of these things, how do you get the human rights questions actually enforced, and whether that's at a UK level or a European level? If you have to go to Europe, it becomes very complicated.
Jim, you spoke about the alternative to multiple black boxes in sort of network centres all up and down the country as being either get it off the guy's computer himself or get it off the service provider. Clearly, as you said, there are times when getting it off the guy's computer himself is not what he wants to do for various reasons. What happens if he's using an uncooperative service provider, of which I'm sure if he turns his mind to it, he might find many? I mean, is it just the case that this stuff catches the stupid ones?
Well, I mean, at the moment, it seems that the very big providers, the ones that are sort of being named and talked about, are actually relatively cooperative. Obviously, you can look at whether national, there has to be international agreement and then international enforcement. The international agreements are often in place, they're just not very well used all the time, and perhaps there's work to be done there. I don't know, maybe if they sort of find some sort of Serbian server in the dark corner of some place or something, and then, nobody's got reach to it, and then maybe that becomes a problem. But at the end of the day, then you're talking about people who are actually making a definite choice to hide themselves. And to be honest, if somebody's making definite choices to hide themselves, I think they're going to manage to do that. I don't think you can just assume that we're going to stop that, or that this plan has any chance of stopping it. I mean, I just don't think that's the case. I mean, you can tunnel things, you can encrypt things, you can use anonymizing networks like Tor. I mean, there's so many different ways of using technology to hide yourself. If somebody's at all clever, they're going to do it if they need to, and if they really think that their privacy, their crime depends on their anonymity to that degree, then they are going to find ways of doing it.
There is a sense in which all law enforcement only catches the stupid ones and people who make mistakes. And if somebody is being directly followed by and directly observed as a suspect, which is something that we can all probably accept with warrants, then they can be caught up on their mistakes. But the mass surveillance techniques only really make sense if you're going to data mine. we're going to keep information just in case it might ever come in useful, along the lines of the ACPO's obsession with keeping number plate records so that they have a record of every journey in Britain so that it might come in useful.
Okay, a question there, and then there's somebody in the middle there.
Hi, Professor. Do you have any thoughts on why the government and the Home Office are pushing these sorts of laws? I mean, is it because they falsely think that this will help them solve crime, or something more sinister?
Okay, and what was the question over there?
Well, no.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
Why would the government try to have been in the town on some of it demonstrably ineffective? Why would they want to do such a thing? And I'd also like to ask the second speaker if he has any example of something that's wrong with the country that have a much more oversight as you want them to really present to the policymakers in this country and say, you see, country X does it my way and it hasn't allowed.
Well, I think as we were saying, there's a similarity between some parts of those two questions. I think the reason that this is being proposed is because it is, as Guy was saying, about data mining techniques, looking for patterns. Well, yeah, Yeah, I mean, it is difficult to know exactly why people are quite so obsessed with techniques which are quite demonstrably difficult or problematic or don't necessarily seem to work. But at the end of the day, they seem to believe and perhaps have some reason to believe they can find patterns. Maybe they will identify some individuals. I don't know. I mean, if somebody else has got a better answer than me, then by all means, go for it. But I think at the end of the day, there's a desire for data and there's a desire for mass surveillance. They think there's information out there and they want it. And, you know, yeah, it won't always be as effective. It's certainly not going to be as effective as they're claiming, but maybe they'll find some things out.
Well, there are several other things that occur. If you talk to any of these people, there is a tremendous anxiety not to be seen, not to have done everything possible to prevent harm to the public. There is a great deal of watch your back. A tremendous risk aversion. And there's also a sense in which they're doing these things because that's what they do. Parkinson's law applies. If you have a department whose function is to collect information and collect intelligence, then it will collect information and collect intelligence as much as it possibly can in order to have a big budget and to feel more important and to be involved in more internal government discussions. And that is my personal favourite theory about why the Home Office has been obsessed with the National Register for so long. Because the National Register makes the Home Office the most important department rather than the Treasury. Because the Home Office is in every transaction between the citizen and the state rather than the Treasury. And the Treasury has to come to it to identify taxpayers. Don't underestimate the willingness of large bureaucracies to spend very large amounts of money on merely promoting their own objectives without any positive end in view, and without any regard to the relative proportionality of risk and reward.
There
was a question about ideal countries. There, I don't think there are any. I don't think there are any ideal countries. There are many countries that are better than Britain, both in Europe, particularly Greece, strangely enough. But with the exception of the aberration of the last 10 years, I would have said that the US was enormously better. And if only they'd extended their Fourth Amendment in the correct way, then they might very well be an exemplar to us all.
Yeah, I'd add that there's plenty of countries with better traditions. And what strikes me at the moment is that the UK's debate is miles behind other countries. I mean, why are privacy concerns so important in Greece or Germany or Sweden? It's because those countries have a bit more experience of the consequences of not taking these things seriously. You know, I was very struck in an EU meeting with Stavros Lambrinidis. We said this, you know, if you were looking at the police states of the 1970s and thinking about the amount of information that they'd be getting hold of, you know, if they were looking at these technologies, they'd think they'd hit a gold mine, and they'd be incredibly, you know, they'd be incredibly desirous of all of this. And that really struck a note with him, because he's a Greek politician of the left, and they didn't have a very good time back in the 70s. You know, so there's direct experience, and people perhaps have, you know, got a bit more idea, I think, sometimes than the UK, who just seem to sort of, there is some sort of innate feeling that the government has some trustability for some strange reason. And I hope that's eroding a little, but you know, perhaps in the public there's less suspicion that things could really go seriously wrong.